I'm very happy now to welcome to the Radio Cafe Germán Zárate. He's from the Presbyterian Church in Colombia. He's an international peacemaker, and he's here visiting the Westminster Presbyterian Church in Santa Fe, as well as Greater Santa Fe. And we're also joined by Reverend Tony Aja of the Westminster Presbyterian Church. Welcome, gentlemen, to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you very much.
So you are an international peacemaker. You're working with all kinds of problems and questions in the nation of Colombia. There are many people there who've suffered as a result of the violent conflicts, people who've been killed, who fled the country as refugees, and who are what's called internally displaced. What is internal displacement?
People from families and communities that are obligated to move out of their own towns. The paramilitaries had the custom to give to the families 24 hours to leave the place.
So a paramilitary would come into your town where you've lived for generations.
Of a farm also.
Your farm, your land that you're cultivating, and say you have 24 hours to leave.
Yes.
And what did they do with the land?
If the farmers had cows or has things in, they use it in the beginning. But later, they have been giving that land to big owners, which is part of the problem right now in terms of who are going to get back to the farmers in the law that is called Victims and Restitution of Lands. There is more than 5 million hectares in that situation right now. That's more or less 10,000 acres, okay. 10 million acres, more
10
or less.
Million acres. Okay.
But the problem with the law is that the law says if somebody has been planting or doing something in that land, the farmer coming to take back his land cannot do something different until the one that is using that land finish with what he is or she is producing.
So if I'm a farmer in Colombia, a paramilitary comes in and steals my land.
Yes.
And milks my cows. I can't have the land back until they're finished milking them?
Yes, because in the present moment, a lot of paramilitaries have been entregarse a la justicia, to come to the justice. Because there is a law that is called Justice and Peace. The paramilitaries have the possibility to pay for what they did from 5 to 8 years if they confess everything they have been doing. And through that, they have to say which lands they took and to whom they gave those lands. And the government begins immediately the processes of give back that land to the farmers. The problem or the limitation in this is that more than the 80% of that land never was registered.
Right.
Registered.
Because people have been living there,
yes,
from the beginning of time.
For generations.
Before there were surveys and property, yeah, deeds and all that stuff.
Yes, that's right. And the government has right now trying to give back the land for those who was taken away. But other limitation that they had having is that some of the owners still are associated with, not today with the paramilitaries, because they changed the name from paramilitaries to Bacrins. Bacrins means bandas criminales, criminal gangs. So when the farmers came back to their lands, they received another threat. So they had to go back. And that is the problem that the government has been having, because this band has said that no matter how many laws the government creates, no matter if the army goes to protect the farmers, they will not let them to have back their land.
Let's go back a little bit to the origins of these conflicts. I mean, it would take us more than a few minutes to talk about the history of violent conflict in Colombia, but how did it get to the situation that it is now, and then how did it de-escalate?
Greed is the key word in this.
Greed.
Greed is the key word in this. And it's tied with the model of development. And also is a kind of result of the negotiations around the free trade agreements. So there is people who think that they need the land to get richer and to be participated in the free trade agreement through agriculture and through mining. And the farmers are not interested in participating in a big business thing or something like that. They are just producing what they need for living daily living or something like that. And I think that the government, the local government, has not the value or the intelligence to present to the farmers how they could be participating in the free trades. They are working with those that already has the international relations, who are also very close to those who used to be close to the paramilitaries taking the lands from the farmers.
So paramilitaries were taking lands away from farmers to be used for things like cash crops?
Yes, that's right. But also is an instrument, because that is tied with the production of drugs and is used to wash money, to laundry money. That's another situation that is involved in this.
So yeah. Paramilitaries were taking land to be used basically for their greedy ends and their, what would you call it, capitalist partners, and for drug growing?
And also to have control of the territory, the political control of the territories. Let me give a personal example of this. I have received a death threat. Why did I receive the death threat? When some of my partners, who are working with the church in human rights, because they, during the time where the paramilitaries gets very strong in many zones, now being bandas criminales, criminal gangs, they need the political control through the elections that are going to be in October. Those elections are going to be for governors, mayors, city councils, and what we call departments, which in the United States are states,
right,
councils. So they have the majority of the control right now. They don't want to lose that. Because having that, they will be able to continue in what they're doing in terms of participating in the FTA and also with the drugs business.
So there are several million people who are internally displaced in Colombia.
More than 5 million.
More than 5 million people.
Yes.
So what do they do? Where do they live? How do they sleep and eat and earn money and go to school or not?
That is a big challenge, not only for the government of Colombia. It's a challenge for the society, the Colombian society, because they, in the beginning, they came to their families in the cities especially. But later, they was using all the resources of their family, so they feel that they have to get out. They came to a places, informal communities, with a lack of potable water or electricity and other things.
Kind of like refugee communities within,
yes,
Colombia.
Yes, that's right. So that was the reason that the UN, the office who has to be with refugees, in the case of Colombia, they make an exception to begin to work with internal refugees.
Right. Usually refugee means somebody who has fled their country, but these,
yes,
are people who have fled within their country.
Yes, that's right. That's right. But in the case of Colombia, with more than 5 million people running away for the whole country, the UN saw the necessity to really be careful in terms of what was happening with human rights there, and also what was happening with the people that was displacing more than five times. So it becomes to be a very big problem for the country. In the beginning, the government did not recognize that human tragedy. So they said that they had no money for. And that is the reason that the UN has to interview to support with the help with other countries in trying to fix the problem of displaced people in Colombia. And with that, the churches, they made their own coordinations of churches to see in which ways they could be part of a solution for these people, because many of the churches, inclusive Roman Catholic churches and Protestant churches and evangelical churches, begins to be also affected by the displaced situation.
It's the church's role, of course, to help people in trouble, but a church can get overstressed, particularly when the government isn't doing its job.
Yeah, that's right. So that has been helping also the churches to grow up in terms of the necessity to have relations with the government, to work together.
So what does that look like? I mean, you are from the Presbyterian Church. What's the relationship like between the Presbyterian Church and the Colombian government?
Oh, right now it's very close. But not only for being Presbyterians, because through this situation, we have been finding that this as an opportunity for different churches to work together. So Pentecostals, Presbyterians, Baptists, Mennonites, Methodists, Episcopalians.
Catholics,
yes.
It's an ecumenical effort.
Yes, the doctrinal differences do not come to be the important thing in this. The important thing in this is how can we serve these people and how can we talk in front of the government and say, hey, you have a duty with these people. This is not a church duty. This is your duty. They are citizens like us. Now, this is right now, but in the past, with all the government, with Mr. Uribe, was absolutely different. We became to be the churches who was helping them, and also the human rights defenders in the past, with the last government, that a lot of people has the image that President Uribe helps for peace in the country. No, that was a kind of Roman peace. I don't know if the people is understanding that historically. It was imposed peace by the force. But now the new president saw the necessity to really bring peace to the country. And that is the reason that we, churches, social organizations, communities, vote for him to repeat a period, because he has been committed with peace. We have been very clear with him that we didn't vote for him as a person or as a party. We vote for peace. And there is a difference between the talks that they're having in La Habana with the FARC and the processes of peace in the interior of the country. Because the processes of peace needs to develop education, housing, health, and the basic things that every citizen are expecting to have from their government. That is for us peace, the process of peace. Now, in which way can we, as a part of the civil society, participate in the process of growing through that for making strong our democracy, which is very important? Because there is people also who says that people who are helping other people to really get in the processes of rebuilding the countries because we are communists or lefties or something like that. No. First of all, we are Christians. Secondly, the majority of the people in Colombia are believers in Jesus Christ. Even there are Roman Catholics or other denominations different than the Presbyterians. And the third thing is that we are finding that this is an opportunity that God is giving us to build something that becomes to be fair for the people and fair also for the country from our faith in Jesus Christ.
We're talking to international peacemaker Germán Zárate from Colombia. One of the things that I think is probably very difficult for the Colombian government is if you want to have, as a nation, an economic base in which you participate in an international economy with hard currency, you need something more than subsistence farming. You need mining, you need cash crops, things like that, that go hand in hand with destroying people's lives and destroying the earth. And it's a devil's bargain that doesn't seem to, at this point in history, really have a very good solution. Because if you turn over, as Colombia probably should, every acre of land back to the people who've been subsistence farming it for centuries, that would probably hurt the economic base of the country.
Yes, and we are very concerned about it. But we also feel, and we are growing up in the direction that peace and development of a country is not something that only the government has to do. In which way can we as a citizens participate in the growing up of economy too? But the economy has to be fair, agree with the necessities of the people.
So what is a fair, what could a fair economy look like in Colombia?
Well, if the farmers, they did in a strike 2 years ago, they stopped. More than 18 million of farmers in the country stopped the country because they say, we cannot be under Monsanto's politics, for example. So we need the government defend us from Monsanto and other multinational corporations who are obligating us to buy what they are selling to us. But also, they said, we need a plan of production in agriculture, milk, and other things for the country. That's an example from the farmers. But I also participate in a meeting promoted for an international organization where we were in that meeting, farmers, people from the churches, from Afro-Colombian organizations, indigenous organizations, and government representatives, and multinational corporations talking about peace. But not peace in the philosophical way. Peace in terms of concrete things that we need to develop the country, to help the country in its economy, so that the economy be able to cover up all of, or at least the majority of the people. And I think those processes are beginning to happen in Colombia, no?
Tell us more about your own role as peacemaker. What do you do?
I love the people. I love the people, and I want and I need the love from the people. So what I do is to participate with my church in the contribution that other organizations are doing for better make the quality of life of the people. So peace is a result of justice. When I'm talking about justice, I'm not talking about legality, which is another thing that we have to be very clear. When I'm talking about justice, I'm talking also about equity. It's a very romantic to talk about equity because that is possible never going to happen. But we can make the effort to find ways to recuperate our sense of community. I was living in Costa Rica for 20 years. And one of the things that I admired from that society there was the possibility of a rich middle class and the poor people taking care of their country and how the government was helping in that purpose. And I think it's something that we can repeat in Colombia also.
Why were you in Costa Rica for 20 years? Did you have to leave Colombia?
Yeah, I had to leave Colombia many years ago, yes.
For political reasons?
For political reasons, yes.
And what made it possible for you to go back?
Oh, the government opens the possibility for us to come back.
What was that like after 20 years to return to Colombia?
Still, I'm and looking for a lot of things that happened during those 20 years. Yeah, I was involved, very involved with the World Council of Churches in Central America in the peace processes that was happening in Central America with Sandinistas and the Somozas in El Salvador and Guatemala. So I learned a lot from those processes there.
Let's turn to Reverend Tony Aja from the Westminster Presbyterian Church here in Santa Fe. What is your role and what is your interest in Latin American politics, peacemaking, issues like internal displacement in Colombia? You're from Cuba originally.
I'm originally from Cuba, and basically the same reasons that Germán has expressed. As a Presbyterian, as a Christian, we're very much involved in issues related to social justice. The Presbyterian Church has had a relationship with Colombia and has been working with the Colombian Church, Presbyterian Church, and other churches as well in issues of peacemaking and social justice and self-development and so on and so forth, sustainability issues, so forth. Germán has been a colleague of ours for many years, as well as his colleagues in the Presbyterian Church. And particularly, I'm brand new here in Santa Fe. I just came here 6 months ago to be the pastor of Westminster Presbyterian. And but before that, I worked for the national office, which are located in Louisville, Kentucky, the national headquarters of the Presbyterian Church. And I worked for the International Mission Program. And I was able to visit Colombia. I was just there last year for a meeting of all the Protestant churches and Reformed churches in Latin America. But anyways, again, the Presbyterian Church is very much involved and supporting our partners throughout the world in issues of social justice. And Colombia is a special place. Several years ago, under the previous government, when Germán and many of his colleagues were actually threatened, their lives were threatened, just like they are now, but back then it was up to, they really upped the ante back then. We developed, along with the Presbyterian Peace Fellowship, which is an affiliated group, the Presbyterian Church, all Presbyterians, of course, we created an accompaniment program. People from the United States will go there, and basically their job was to be together with our Colombian friends, because the North American presence would serve as a shield for the paramilitaries and the government agents and so forth, because it's a one thing to kill a Colombian, it's another thing to kill a North American. Many people from this church here, Westminster, and other churches here in northern New Mexico were the first one that signed up for that program. And they spent weeks, months in Colombia. Basically, whenever they went with them as human shields, so to speak.
Did you do that?
No, I did not, but I was, at the time, I was in charge of all the international mission personnel functions, and I was one of those who put together, coordinated this program with the Colombian Church and the Presbyterian Peace Fellowship. I was involved as an administrator at that time and became very familiar with that.
It must be quite something to recruit people. Would you like to be a human shield?
Yes, I remember phone calls, because we had an emergency line that people could call in case, because we protected them. We will evacuate them if they needed to be evacuated. And so a couple of times I got, when I was staffing the emergency line along with people in my staff, we took turns. I got a couple of phone calls at 3 o'clock in the morning wanting to make sure that somebody was going to answer the phone. So yes, I said, hang up, because there might be a real emergency. Yes, somebody will answer the phone.
Yeah.
But it's been an amazing road that we have been walking together, a journey, working together in solidarity, in partnership with our friends and colleagues. By the way, he's going to be preaching at my church, Westminster Presbyterian.
Yeah, we wanted to talk about that this coming Sunday.
Yes.
At what time?
11 o'clock.
11 o'clock in the morning. So you'll be preaching. Do you know yet what your sermon is about?
Oh, yes.
It's how life is more important than death.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Yes.
Well, I want to thank you both very much for being with us on the Radio Cafe. Germán Zárate from the Presbyterian Church in Colombia. He's an international peacemaker. And Reverend Tony Aja, pastor of the Westminster Presbyterian Church in Santa Fe. And where is the church?
Okay, the church, great question, at the corner of West Manhattan Avenue and St. Francis, between Agua Fría and West Manhattan, right there. You can't miss it. It's a real nice Pueblo-style building that's been there. Westminster was the first Spanish-speaking Presbyterian church in this area back in 1893.
Oh, okay.
And so we offer bilingual, semi-bilingual services, and we sing hymns in Spanish and English and so forth. So everyone is welcome every Sunday.
Well, I have to say it's very inspiring to hear not only about the work that you're doing, but the way in which so many different churches are working together.
Yes.
And I hope you come back to Santa Fe and give us an update in the coming years.
Sure, sure.
You're welcome.
If it's possible, anytime. I will be doing that.